Good afternoon. My name is Beth Morrell, and I'm the Vice President of Communications and Education at the Missouri Hospital Association. Welcome to today's webinar on the role of trustees, guidelines for new or rookie trustees. This webinar will provide new and less experienced trustees with a solid foundation to understand your fundamental roles and responsibilities as you begin your service as a hospital trustee. I'd like to take this opportunity to let you also know that MHA offers a Governance Excellence Certificate program each year, which is a comprehensive program examining many of the intricacies of hospital governance. Registration for this program will begin in June. If you'd like to participate, please contact me at the Missouri Hospital Association. This program is also taught by today's speaker, Larry Walker. In addition, we'll have three more trustee webinars scheduled throughout the year in 2015. The next one will be on Thursday, August 6th, and will be on the topic of Missouri's quality initiatives and the evolution of population health. So you might want to mark your calendars now. Because today's webinar is being recorded, we will take questions at the conclusion of the webinar. As a reminder, the handouts for today's webinar were sent to your email address this morning for your future reference. Our speaker today, Larry Walker, is president of the Walker Company Healthcare Consulting. Larry, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. With that, I'll turn the program over to you, Larry.
Thanks, Beth, and good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. As you likely know, or soon will know if you're a brand new trustee, but also especially if you're a veteran trustee, you and your board colleagues govern a hospital that's operating in a very complex and uncertain and challenging environment. You're all feeling that in one way or another. In order for you to govern successfully through what will certainly be increasingly difficult challenges and issues that are going to test your skills and your creativity and your leadership capacity, you'll need to understand and practice what we've identified as some fundamental responsibilities that characterize and define high-performance governance. So let me tell you a little bit about our agenda. There is a lot for you to do and know. During our time today, I'll quickly review some of the common challenges that trustees and their organizations are facing. I'll review with you 9 key governance roles that all trustees must understand, not just new trustees, not just lesser experienced trustees, but all trustees. And toward the end of our time, I'll present some of the characteristics of highly effective board members that I've observed over the years in working with boards of trustees across the United States and Canada. I can assure you all of one thing, and that is that hospital governance, when it's practiced right, is not easy. It requires a high level of knowledge and experience that is often learned, typically learned, on the job. What we know is that it requires time and commitment, patience, compromise, and an enduring commitment to understanding and meeting community health needs. As I said at the opening, hospital leadership teams, of which you're an integral part, face a broad and growing number of critical challenges. These challenges are all simultaneously converging to make hospital governance more difficult and more important to organizational success than ever before. Inadequate reimbursement, healthcare reform, economic uncertainty, rising costs, workforce shortages, cracks in public trust, continuing pressure to improve quality and patient safety, and burdensome federal and state regulatory mandates are all fueling the need for expert trusteeship. And these are just the macro challenges. You likely have many more challenges at the local level that you also need to be prepared to govern through. What all this means is that trustees, whether they're brand new, have a little bit of experience, or are long tenured, have to be prepared to guide their organizations to success through a period of dramatic environmental change that has more complexity, more uncertainty, and a need for transformational thinking than at any time in healthcare's history. You know, there's a lot of talk in governance circles today about the imperative to ensure what many call competency-based governance. I thought about this a lot, and in my view, competency simply isn't good enough. What your hospital needs from you and from all board members is expert governance. And an expert, I think, is a level above someone who's simply competent. That's what our clinical leaders, our administrative leaders, our employees, our partners, our stakeholders, and our communities deserve, and certainly what they should expect. So who really cares about how expert your governance is? It's not just those inside your organization and in your community who demand governing expertise. It's the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Office of Inspector General, the IRS, Standard & Poor's, Fitch, Moody's, the Joint Commission, your Attorney General, and certainly your legislative leaders as well. And let's be clear about one thing. Becoming a governance expert over the course of your trusteeship is truly a personal responsibility. Your CEO, your board colleagues, MHA, and others can only help you so far. It's really a moral and an ethical and a legal responsibility that you have on behalf of the hospital and on behalf of the community that you're privileged to serve. How you practice and develop your governance over time will have a significant impact on your hospital's ability to achieve its core purpose, and I'm sure that core purpose includes delivering high quality, safe and affordable health care and improving the health and the lives of the people you serve. That is a huge responsibility, and it's one that certainly should never be taken lightly. It's really important, I think, that trustees understand clearly the difference between governance and management. In working with organizations across the country, that this is one of the things that many boards have a difficult time discerning. It's really pretty simple. The governing body, you, are responsible for ensuring the mission and vision of your hospital. You have to see the big picture in order to lead your hospital forward in carrying out your mission and vision. The roles that you have involve everything from ensuring the cost-effective utilization of resources to defining the hospital's mission and vision, and then helping to establish a long-range strategic direction that will secure the mission and achieve the vision. Although boards have many and varied responsibilities, all trustees have primary responsibilities in 8 key areas, which I'll review with you today. Understanding and adhering to 3 fundamental fiduciary duties, which are critical to everything the board does, is the first. And that's really central to everything that you do. Ensuring achievement of the mission, the vision, and the values, advancing quality and patient safety, engaging in strategic thinking and strategic direction rather than strategic planning, exercising insightful and well-informed financial leadership, ensuring certainty of compliance and risk management, building what I call knowledge capital, nurturing a trustful relationship with the CEO, and certainly building and sustaining strong community connections. This is a broad portfolio of responsibilities that I think every trustee needs to understand thoroughly and understand exactly what their individual and collective responsibilities are in achieving. So let's talk about the fiduciary duties first, because everything you're responsible for, as I said a minute ago, emanates from those. You are the ultimate authority for your hospital. You set the overall agenda. You chart the course for your hospital's future. Our friends at the Internal Revenue Service suggest that organizations review and consider a number of key areas to help ensure that trustees understand their roles and responsibilities and that they actively promote good governance practices. And you know that a suggestion from the IRS is a wise practice to follow. So let's take a look at what the fiduciary responsibility is comprised of and why it's so important for all trustees to understand it. Legally, board members have to take particular care to become thoroughly informed before making a business decision. They need to put the needs of the hospital first when taking responsibility for its operations, and they must abide by laws and regulations and standards of hospital operations. These 3 responsibilities, if you don't already know them, are the duty of care, the duty of loyalty, and the duty of obedience. These aren't just suggested duties. Every person, every trustee who accepts a position on a hospital board of trustees should take these duties very, very seriously. So let's talk about these in order. The first is the duty of loyalty. This duty, in essence, bars trustees from their use of their board position in a self-serving manner. It's essentially the requirement for trustees to place the interests of the organization before all else. And what that undivided loyalty means is that board members are objective, they're unbiased in their thinking and approaches to issues and decisions, they're free from external control, ulterior motives, and constituency thinking, and they have no conflict of interest when discussing issues and making decisions. The second duty is the duty of care. That duty means that trustees have to always use the same level of judgment in conducting the business of the hospital that they would use in their own personal business activities. And remember, these are legal, moral, and ethical responsibilities. This duty of care is accomplished by obtaining the necessary and adequate information that you need before making any decisions, asking the right questions, asking them at the right time. It means always acting in good faith and making decisions that are always, always in the best interests of your hospital. The third and final duty is the duty of obedience. The duty of obedience requires board members to follow all state and national laws, bylaws, rules, and regulations when they're representing the interests of the hospital. In order to be successful fiduciaries, in order to carry out the duties of care, obedience, and loyalty, board members must act in a manner that protects corporate operations and ensures public trust. So how do trustees ensure that they're fiduciarily fit? In order to protect the interests of your organization, all trustees should be familiar with federal and state laws that regulate the hospital. They should understand and always adhere to the organization's legal requirements that are typically reflected in the articles of incorporation, in the hospital's bylaws, and in various governance resolutions and policies. They should govern through a board-approved job description or an outline of the duties and responsibilities that accurately reflect your fiduciary accountabilities. And trustees should diligently prepare for all meetings by reading and really understanding the governance support materials, by regularly attending meetings, and by participating energetically in all governance deliberations. In addition, trustees need to be open and willing to admit when they don't understand something or when there's a disagreement over a procedure or a policy or a decision or a direction. They should take personal responsibility to ensure that the organization has a meaningful, long-term strategic plan. Updates and information should be reported in an easy-to-understand manner that facilitates the kind of robust dialogue that you need at every board meeting, that explores alternatives, and that ensures that you're making evidence-based decisions. In addition, board members should avoid, must avoid, business relationships that could create a real or a potential conflict of interest. And sometimes a potential conflict of interest can be as important because of the perception as a real conflict of interest. And then finally, trustees should ensure that the organization has adequate D&O insurance, directors and officers insurance, with appropriate indemnification for trustees in carrying out their prescribed duties. So now that we've laid that fiduciary groundwork and we've talked about how important those fiduciary duties are as being central to everything that you do as board members, let's talk about purpose for just a few minutes. You as board members are ultimately responsible in every way for your hospital's long-term success in meeting the healthcare needs of the people you serve. It's really incumbent upon board members to ensure that there is a tight strategic fit and a linkage between your hospital's mission, vision, and values. Your hospital's mission, vision, and values are the foundation for everything your hospital does. They really form a strategic triangle, and the differences between these three foundations of mission, values, and vision, unfortunately, are often not well understood. So let me define them for you. Your hospital's mission is the fundamental purpose or reason for the hospital's existence. It serves as the foundation for strategic thinking and strategic planning. It should be central to everything that you do. It's the cornerstone of your strategic plan. It's the cornerstone of your agendas, and it drives the course of action that your hospital will adopt to achieve your goals and your objectives. Your values simply are the principles or the core organizational beliefs that guide everyone in your hospital family's behavior. It guides board members' behavior. It guides medical staff behavior, guides employee behavior. Hopefully, it guides the behavior of your partners and other stakeholders that you're involved with. The vision is a projection of your hospital's future. The vision imagines your future possibilities. It guides your strategic choices, and it provides a long-range focus for decision-making. If you have an effective vision, that vision will promote change, it will inspire key constituencies, it will put important decision-making into context, and it will coalesce the board, the medical staff, the employees, and everyone else in the hospital family around a meaningful and a motivating and a powerful long-term objective. Now, the responsibility and authority for determining your hospital's mission lies with you, the board. You're responsible for working with senior management to develop the goals and objectives and policies that grow out of and are measured against the mission statement. Your strategic plan should be created using the mission statement as its guide and should identify goals and strategies and initiatives to achieve those goals. And the plan should be reviewed regularly to assess its ability to meet and further the mission of your hospital. So the bottom line with mission is that everything that you do in one way or another should be connected to your ability to achieve that core purpose, that unique thing that you do as an organization in serving your community's needs. Now, these are some of the practical steps that you and your governing board colleagues can take to ensure your success in living your values and achieving your mission and your vision. First of all, you should ensure that the mission, vision, and values are prominent elements of decision-making at all board meetings. They should be prominently displayed with every board meeting agenda, whether at the top of the agenda or on the wall or in front of trustees at every board meeting. The board should question anything that's on the agenda that doesn't in some way connect to the mission and the values and the vision. And then when the board considers any decision, trustees should discuss how the decision will contribute to fulfilling the mission, values, and vision. So those key statements should be in the forefront of your mind all the time as you're deliberating and engaging in dialogue and setting strategic direction, asking how is this going to help us achieve what we have decided as a board are our fundamental responsibilities. You need to look at your policy and strategy decisions and put them to the mission and values and vision alignment test. Do they fit? Can you explain their rationale? Is an investment in them an investment in furthering the mission, the values, and vision, and the success of those? You should regularly examine your strategic progress and review the indicators that tell you whether you're on the right strategic course, whether you used what's called a balanced scorecard or a dashboard or some other manner, and continually probe the value of the initiatives that you've approved in helping you achieve your mission and vision. And you should ensure that a well-defined, board-approved system is in place to measure your progress toward achieving the mission, vision, and strategies, and then be willing to take timely, corrective action when it's necessary. One vital question that I think should be regularly considered by the Board of Trustees is this: what do we know today that we didn't know when we developed our vision for the future? And if we'd known then what we know now, would our assumptions change? Would our strategies change? What would we be doing differently? It's important that your mission, values, and vision be reviewed on a planned and predictable basis, typically at the board's annual retreat or once a year at an extended. It's important to understand that these are not static statements, because as you evolve, as the environment evolves, your mission and your vision will evolve, especially your vision. Assumptions should be challenged, and developing reality should be factored into your hospital's thinking about where it's headed. The only real way for you to ensure that occurs is through a continual flow of new information, new ideas, and new knowledge that will drive new assumptions. And that, I believe, is a critical responsibility of every trustee. Not just veteran trustees, not just highly experienced trustees, but every trustee has that responsibility. Well, let's move on now to your greatest responsibility, and that's quality and patient safety. Trustees need to be proactive in ensuring high levels of quality improvement and patient safety. It's ultimately the board's responsibility to ensure that your hospital is taking clear and appropriate measures to provide the best quality in the safest and in the most efficient and effective manner, because that's how value is defined today. Boards need to establish and nurture an organizational accountability and a culture that continually seeks to improve quality and patient safety at every turn. Board members individually and collectively can make a big difference in quality and patient safety. And one of the ways that healthcare leaders are working collectively to make a difference is by focusing on achieving the concept of what many of you may have heard of, the triple aim. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement, which is more commonly referred to as the IHI, created this concept of the triple aim to help optimize the performance of healthcare organizations across the United States. That triple aim brings together three critical elements: better health for the population that you serve, an improved experience of care, including quality and patient safety, and care that is provided at a reasonable cost. The trustees are ultimately responsible for ensuring that high-quality care is consistently and effectively delivered to patients and consumers in every encounter, every day, every minute. The trustee leadership team is responsible for ensuring that the staff has the support and the resources necessary to enable them to fulfill those roles. So you have a workforce support capacity. And trustees are also responsible for overseeing the quality of medical care that's delivered in your hospital through your quality assurance program, through your credentialing and privileging programs. It's really all about infusing quality throughout the organization and throughout the board's activities. Quality and patient safety should be an integral part of your hospital's mission statement and should be prominent, as I mentioned earlier, as a part of the agenda at every board meeting. And that doesn't just mean having a quality report on the agenda. It means connecting quality and patient safety to everything that you talk about. Hospital leaders need to continually encourage input and ideas from your medical staff on quality of care issues. And finally, trustees have to be comfortable with this responsibility of quality and seek education regarding it and consider quality as a component of every decision that they make. Now, the IHI has identified 15 specific governance behaviors that they believe increase the odds of rapid quality improvement. I want to just tell you real quickly about a few of those. According to the IHI, high-achieving trustees and boards take ownership of quality problems. They make quality an agenda item and infuse it throughout every board meeting. They invest time in board meetings to understand where they are, what the gap is between their current performance and the best in class, not just the top quartile, not just the top 25% or the median, but the very best of the best. They aggressively embrace transparency and publicly display performance data, and they establish accountability for quality of care results at the CEO level with a meaningful portion of the CEO's compensation linked to quality improvement. They also require a commitment to safety in the job description of every employee and require an orientation to quality improvement aims and methods and skills for all new employees and physicians. They set goals for the education of board members about quality and safety, and they make sure that the board complies with those goals. And they allocate the resources that are adequate to ongoing improvement projects and invest in building quality improvement capacity throughout the organization. You as trustees should ensure that all of these governance behaviors are practiced consistently in your governance. Well, now let's explore your role in helping to direct the strategic focus of your hospital. In essence, strategic planning is an organized and a systematic approach for understanding and dealing with your hospital's future possibilities and uncertainties. It takes what I would call an outside-in view of the organization and defines what's required to achieve the objectives that are included in your mission and vision statements. So strategic planning involves a whole host of elements, including future-focused thinking, an understanding of the current and emerging environment, diagnosing problems and determining solutions, being creative and having the courage to commit to a course of action, selling the vision and the plan, monitoring its implementation, and making your plan a dynamic business-building tool that's responsive to your hospital's ever-changing needs. A real high-performance plan relies on the viewpoints of a broad range of constituents and stakeholders. Your hospital's planners will need to reach out to people and organizations throughout the community and engage them in meaningful discussions about their views of your hospital, about their community health needs, about barriers that they perceive to getting care in your organization, not only inpatient care, but care through any of the services and locations that you have, issues of access, and more. The strategic plan should also help your hospital's leaders determine a meaningful and a realistic and a challenging and a compelling vision of the future. So we're back to vision. The key for the board, I think, is to ensure that that vision really means something, that it's not just words on the wall, that it's not just words on paper, that it's really something that you're striving to achieve, and when you achieve it, you will be among the very best of the best. And finally, a high-performance strategic planning process ensures a clear understanding of the resources that you require for strategic success. It articulates the accountabilities that everyone in the organization has in performing their part in ensuring your strategic success. So, what are some of the success basics when it comes down to your role as board members? The role of the board is to be a leader and a motivator and a catalyst for strategic success. It's really important that you understand that you should not be involved in the details of creating and implementing the details of the plan, but you do have to be excellent strategic thinkers. The job of creating and implementing the plan details are up to the management that you entrust with that important function, and they are the ones who carry that out. It's the strategic thinking role that you have that's absolutely unique to the board in the planning process. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the board should govern and lead the strategic plan, not create and not manage it. That simple statement, unfortunately, too often gets lost in misunderstanding, in misapplication, in miscommunication, and then even further, unfortunately, in missed opportunities. As we discussed earlier, the board is the driver and the keeper of the organization's mission, values, vision, goals, and strategies, but it shouldn't dictate the plans for delivering on those. When the board does that, it ceases to play a governing role, and it instead plays a management role, which unfortunately blurs the lines between these two critical roles. You as trustees have an ultimate responsibility for the design of the strategic planning process and for the organization's success or failure. In order for you to carry out that responsibility, you have to assume a strong and focused leadership role. You can't afford to reactively wait to see what developments will unfold in your marketplace. Moving on to finance, maybe you've heard the phrase, no margin, no mission, and it's certainly true. You have a responsibility to protect the limited resources of your hospital to ensure optimum services and benefit to the community, with a heavy emphasis on the word benefit to the community. You have a responsibility to ensure the cost-effective utilization of resources and the establishment of meaningful long-term and short-term financial plans. So to do that, you should regularly review meaningful and understandable financial reports in a finance committee and at the full board, and ensure that you've got adequate capital available for your hospital's investment strategies, and actively participate in and encourage fundraising efforts for your hospital. The annual budget is the primary vehicle for the board and administration to establish your financial objectives. It's really important, I think, that trustees understand the assumptions upon which the budget is based. Those assumptions should be reasonable, they should be clearly understood, They should tie directly to service development, and they should tie directly to your hospital's mission, vision, and strategies. Again, back to those core documents that guide everything that you do. The board also has a responsibility to engage external auditors to perform an annual audit of your hospital's financial records. This audit, which is made even more important today due to some of the fairly recent corporate governance and accounting abuses, helps the board determine if the financial position and operations of the hospital are accurately and fairly presented, if they're in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Trustees should use the audited financial statements to determine whether the hospital is reaching its established financial and operational targets, and it should be a tool in helping to determine progress and assess whether goals and strategies require any modification along the way. The board's financial planning direction and decisions should flow out of your long-range strategic planning initiatives. Studies of the financial feasibility of new programs or capital acquisitions should be regularly performed and reported to you, and the board should use financial performance against budget to gauge organizational progress and effectiveness. You definitely need to do more than hear a financial report and approve it. This is where the concept of what's called reasonable inquiry enters into the governance process. Well, now we're moving on to compliance. And compliance is an area that's central to your legal responsibilities as board members. A strong and effective compliance plan ensures that your hospital consistently complies with all state and federal laws that govern your activities and that govern the delivery of healthcare. It also assures that your hospital consistently complies with the laws that are related to its business practices. Now, ensuring compliance is not a simple task. If you don't believe me, just ask your CEO. Trustees need to understand what their accountabilities are and how to best maintain oversight and monitor organizational performance, not only to ensure organizational success and viability, but also to minimize risk and best serve patients. So to effectively oversee compliance, trustees need to be knowledgeable about the structure and operations of the compliance program. You typically would get that through a periodic briefing from the compliance officer, from the CEO, from the CFO, or whomever is responsible in your organization for compliance. You should ensure that all the components of a sound compliance program are in place and that all trustees are prepared to exercise their independence by staying well informed on issues and by actively discussing the potential implications for the organization. Trustees who are armed with a clear understanding of their fundamental fiduciary duties of care and obedience and loyalty, including the notion of reasonable inquiry, and who are engaged and active and accountable board participants should be ready and able to manage governance risk and ensure that the hospital is able to have rigorous compliance with all laws and regulations. Now, trustees can't afford to be passive recipients of information. You need to understand the most critical risks facing the organization and how the compliance program is addressing them. You should make reasonable inquiry and act to ensure the organization's compliance with all regulatory and reporting requirements. You should understand your organization's compliance processes, your code of ethics, and the policies in place that promote compliance with laws and regulations, like whistleblower policies, document retention, fundraising policies, and also understand the goals of compliance. In addition, you should understand how your organization's policies and procedures address your compliance risk areas and what internal controls you have in place that counter your vulnerabilities. And you should be aware of some of the significant regulatory and industry developments that may affect your risk and how your compliance program is structured to address those risks. But there's still more. You also need to always make decisions that are guided by your mission, vision, and values and in compliance with the scope of your governing documents, and ensure that a board-approved quality and patient safety plan that ensures compliance with applicable state and federal and local regulatory and statutory requirements and the Joint Commission standards, if you're Joint Commission accredited, for ensuring quality and safety are in place. Compliance reporting in your organization should be easy, and individuals making any kind of compliance complaint should not be retaliated against. Finally, you should ensure that compliance audits are conducted and effective correction plans are implemented, and then monitor progress and outcomes of the compliance effort to ensure success in this area that will minimize exposure to risk for both the hospital and the board and you as individual trustees. I think knowledge is power, and hopefully knowledge is what we're building this afternoon. What trustees needed to know 5 years ago is simply no longer sufficient in today's world. That's why MHA has meetings and conferences and trustee programs that continually seek to engage trustees in Missouri in understanding their accountabilities and responsibilities and heighten their capacity for meaningful leadership. Governance knowledge capital, what I call knowledge capital, is one of your hospital's most valuable assets, because trustees who want to be true governance knowledge leaders need to prepare themselves and make a commitment by continuously improving their knowledge in order for them to deliver the kind of penetrating and insightful leadership that their communities want and certainly that they deserve. Governance education is a continual process. It's not an end result. The kind of education like you receive from MHA and at your board meetings and retreats is the vehicle for improved governance knowledge, but the end result and the benefit of governance education is greater knowledge, heightened leadership intelligence, and a focus that ensures that trustees are fully prepared to engage around critical issues and make evidence-based versus what I call gut-based or anecdotal decisions. Well-planned and well-focused governance education builds the knowledge capital the board needs to ensure that the right decisions will be made using the right kind of meaningful information and data that informs effective decision-making. So what are some of the critical success factors for building board knowledge? In order for you to ensure a successful education process, I think there are a number of factors that are critical, including a dedication by the board to investing in knowledge building, both personally and on behalf of the entire board. It requires enthusiastic trustee participation and clearly stated education expectations. It requires intimate trustee involvement, and it requires education that is individualized and that's customized to trustees' unique needs. Every trustee, as you well know, is not in the same place in their knowledge and understanding of the challenges and issues, marketplace situations, healthcare reform, and a variety of other drivers of success. So it's really important that each trustee has a personalized and a customized opportunity to be able to gain the knowledge and the understanding that they need to lead with purpose. So let's talk about these in a little bit more depth. The board needs to invest in knowledge building because education shouldn't be a one-time event. It's not an annual thing that you do with MHA, although that's good, but it should instead be an institutionalized commitment by the board to ensuring that the board has the knowledge resources that you need to make strategic decisions and be the most effective leadership team you can possibly be. I think that participation should be mandatory as a condition of trusteeship. I don't think it should be a suggestion. Every board member should have an understanding of the critical local, state, national healthcare issues and developments and what they mean for the hospital, what the implications are for the organization. We can't have boards where some trustees are disengaged from continuous learning. I think that requirements for governance participation, not only in education, but in governance self-assessment, which is also a part of education, should be expressly discussed when you're recruiting trustees. It shouldn't be a surprise to new trustees after they begin serving on the board that there are requirements for participation in educational sessions and in the board self-assessment and in trustee growth and development programs. prospective trustees that you bring onto the board should embrace the importance of knowledge building in their development as a valuable leadership asset. And I think education should be directed where possible by trustees themselves. Trustees may be asked to research certain topics or certain issues and present the findings and the implications and the possibilities to the entire board, effectively making individual trustees content experts in a variety of different areas and making them the knowledge builders for the benefit of the entire board. So efforts should be made to understand the knowledge needs of every trustee and provide every individual with the information that they need to be active and engaged and productive participants in the governance process. Now, moving on to a very important area, one person and one person only works for and is accountable to you and to the board, and that's your CEO. Your hospital's CEO and trustees need to have a vibrant, trust-based relationship in order for you to successfully navigate the opportunities and the challenges that are inherent in today's complex and fast-paced healthcare world. What that means is that you need to exert leadership excellence in a number of key areas, including clear and consistent communication, adherence to well-defined roles and responsibilities, and clear performance expectations by the CEO, and accountabilities for the CEO that are appropriately rewarded using responsible compensation assessment policies and procedures. Trustees can ensure several practices to ensure strong relations with the CEO, including clarifying performance expectations, identifying measurable goals and evaluation guidelines, and conducting meaningful annual reviews of the CEO's performance. They should understand that the selection of the CEO is the board's most significant responsibility, and that the CEO is the one person more than any others who will significantly shape the future of your hospital. And using incentive compensation targeted to the achievement of strategic directions is important as a way to motivate and challenge and reward the CEO. And if relationship or performance problems do emerge along the way, trustees need to be sure that they're communicated to the CEO in a timely manner, not hidden, not talked about in the parking lot, not talked about in small groups, and allow your CEO time to correct any problems that you perceive may exist that are under his or her control. As you know, one of the most important board responsibilities is hiring and retaining a high-performance CEO. This process involves ensuring that you have an appropriate compensation and benefits package, that you conduct an annual CEO performance appraisal, and that you set realistic expectations and maintain a productive and a continuous dialogue with your CEO on his or her progress and performance. The evaluation of the CEO's performance is a vital trustee role. While there's a great degree of variation that I've seen across the country in how boards evaluate their CEO, it's important that the process exhibit three things. It has to be deliberate, it has to be objective, and it has to be fair. The American College of Healthcare Executives suggests that boards can do four things to make that happen. One, they can develop a policy statement that presents goals for evaluation of the CEO. They can develop a system for evaluating the CEO, including review of the position description, a specification of the components and methods of the evaluation, and a preparation of a written statement of guidelines for an evaluation process that outlines or delineates the responsibilities of the board and the CEO. They can also implement an effective performance evaluation process. And finally, they should periodically review, along with the CEO, how well the evaluation process is working. It may be working really well for the board and not be working so well for the CEO, or vice versa. So that's something that should be reviewed on a periodic basis. In addition to hiring and motivating and retaining your CEO, you also need to work with that person to define his or her role in relation to your role. Although it's not the role of trustees to manage or operate the hospital, as I hope you understand by now, it is your role to monitor and oversee and measure how the hospital is being managed and led. That means working closely with the CEO, monitoring and evaluating that person's performance in achieving the strategies and initiatives that you and your board colleagues have approved. You know, everything that you do is ultimately to serve your community's healthcare needs, and I hope that that is embedded in one way or the other in your mission, values, and vision. One of the most important roles of trustees, and it's certainly a role that you can play very well, is to maintain strong and vibrant community relationships that build community understanding and loyalty to your hospital. You play a truly vital role in nurturing strong public perceptions of your hospital and raising the profile of your hospital as a premier community financial, healthcare, and social services asset. Every community has a wide range of key constituencies or stakeholders who can and should be communicated with and positively influenced. Trustees are an ideal conduit between your hospital and these community groups, which include but certainly aren't limited to community spokespersons or healthcare advocates, purchasers, insurers and other payers, patients and families, legislative and regulatory bodies, your news media, civic groups and agencies and organizations, religious leaders, business owners, and educational institutions. And I'm sure that there are others that you can think of beyond those. Trustees need to ensure that their hospital's community service and health improvement role is well articulated in the mission statement and ensure strong and meaningful understanding by all segments of the community of the challenges that are facing your hospital today. One of the most underappreciated and ill-understood factors in the public today, and also understanding the challenges that you'll face in the future. By building that level of awareness and understanding, you'll be in a better position to solidify the community support that you need when you need it, to build strong bridges, and to ensure broad-based and widespread loyalty to your hospital as an economic engine and as a vital healthcare resource. So there are several community health leadership success factors that I think are critical to your future success. Incorporating a commitment to community health in the mission and the strategies of your hospital, maintaining systematic investment in community health, ensuring that there's a board committee whose mission is to promote community health improvement, and committing and to assessing the attitudes in the community and defining and measuring community health are all vital. So, now as we come to a close, let me summarize and identify for you what I believe are some of the critical governing and personal attributes of a highly effective trustee. You might want to think about how you measure up to these, and if you feel that there are areas where you're not as effective as you would like to be, think about how you can improve. These are the qualities and the characteristics that I believe are needed to ensure that you can successfully carry out your crucial governance role. Let's look at the governing attributes first. A high-performance trustee builds good working relationships with his or her trustee colleagues, understands the key issues and challenges facing the hospital, focuses attention on long-term policy and strategic issues rather than administrative and operational issues, and offers unique skills that broaden board perspectives and inform decision-making. In addition, he or she asks probing and insightful questions that contribute to effective dialogue and decisions, and comes to meetings prepared to engage in meaningful discussion and thoughtful decision-making. On the personal side, personal attributes are important too. High-performance trustees keep an open mind on issues and provide objective analysis and evaluation. They commit the time necessary for successful board service, and it seems that time required is growing and has been growing for quite some time. They think quickly and assimilate ideas well. They're able to handle ambiguous situations, always bringing focus to the hospital's pursuit of its mission and strategic objectives. They exercise constructive skepticism. They make sound, independent judgments and decisions, and they always, always seek to improve their personal leadership performance. Now, as I said at the top of the program, that's a lot for you to do. That's a lot for you to know. you face a large and a growing number of critical challenges, all of which are converging to make your trusteeship more important to your hospital's success than ever before. I think that leadership teams that are expert, not just competent, but expert in their governance practices will be in the best position to successfully weather these storms of change and strengthen their hospital's strategic success. To help you in your governance journey, we and MHA are providing two publications that you may download from the association's website this afternoon. One is a comprehensive compilation of healthcare and healthcare reform terms and acronyms that we have put together. And the other is a list of boardroom basics for new trustees that we hope you'll find useful, particularly you new trustees, as you progress forward in developing and exercising expert governance for your organization. I want to thank you for your time and your interest in becoming the best trustee you can be. We do have time for a few questions. I want you to know that I'm also available after the call to address any other questions you may have. My contact information is on the screen. You can call me at 503-694-8539, or you can send an email to me at lw@walkercompany.com. Now, we have about 7 minutes remaining, Beth. If there are any questions or comments that anyone has, I'd be happy to do my best to field those.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Brenda Prather.
Hi, this is Dr. Tobler. I'm the CEO up at Scotland County Hospital viewing the webinar. Thank you, Mr. Walker.
Good afternoon.
It was very, very helpful.
Thank you.
I'm new in the role here, although I've been a physician here for eight years, and the board is interested in if there's an evaluation tool out there, which we both are very interested in. If there's something out there that folks are using, it'd be helpful to help me do a better job.
What I'd like to do is speak with Beth Morrell and the folks at MHA about that. There are many, many tools that are available. There are tools available from the Center for Healthcare Governance, from the Governance Institute. We have a board self-assessment tool and process that we've been using for a number of years, but it may very well be that MHA has some resources for you in that area as well. Beth, are you on the phone?
I am on the line. I would be happy to talk with you further, Doctor. If you'd like to give me a call, we can see what different resources are available, whether they're through Larry or through the Center for Governance, but be happy to talk with you further.
Great, I'll do that. Thank you much.
I think one of the things that's important, and I really appreciate your question, governance evaluation seems to be much more heightened among boards and administrative leaders than I've seen it in a long time, because the transformation of healthcare is so dramatic that boards are looking introspectively at themselves and saying, are we constructed right? Are we leading right? Do we have the right people? Are we developing the right expertise? How can we do a more effective job? The best way to do that is through a well-planned and well-organized governance self-assessment that really focuses, after the assessment itself, that focuses on what are the areas where we either don't have a consensus among board members or where we clearly see that there are opportunities for improvement, and then put that into a governance development plan with accountabilities, timeframes, and responsibilities, just like you do with any strategy that you have for your organization. And I think your state association is the best place for you to go to try to find out what those various resources may be.
Great, thanks.
You're welcome.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time.
All right, Beth?
Yes, I thank you so much for your sharing with us today, Larry. We really appreciate your knowledge and expertise. I would like to remind the participants that we do have on our MHANet website a tab under the education link that does include trustee resources. So there may be some valuable resources available for you there. And also just want to remind you about our trustee webinar schedule, that we do have three other programs lined up this year, and we will be sending you information about those programs. But if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us. That's what we're here for. And I appreciate you all taking time to listen to today's webinar. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.